Call for the weeping mothers, the lost fathers, and the forsaken children, and let them come quickly, for a voice of crying is heard out of Zion. For we are greatly confused, for death has come into our ghettos to cut off the young men and women from the streets of Philadelphia, New York, L.A., Georgia, Ohio, Florida, Mississippi, and throughout America, South America, the Caribbean islands, Africa, Asia, and all over the world. So return unto me, thus saith Yah, and I will return unto you, O my people.
Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, New Media for the New Millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom, and with all thy getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com. That's timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and listen to the live stream from that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening and catch the live stream there also. You can go to ourradionetwork.com. Again, that's ourradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening and catch the live stream there. broadcasting out of the Black Belt. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. And in that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon, and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you have the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, it's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted daily. And do me a favor, before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook. And Time for an Awakening Media is there also. Full of new podcasts of some of the new programming on Time for Awakening, and always interesting articles being posted that you can download, listen to the programs at later times, even share with your friends. So again, make that one of your favorites and put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. Tonight, we were scheduled to have a special guest join us. It's an international call, and sometimes it's usually a little tricky. But if he doesn't join us, we'll entertain the listening audience with always provocative conversation. But we'll be right back to get things started either way after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072, spelled new as in numerous, on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back. Time for an awakening, and as you might notice, I'm flying solo again this evening. Brother Richard, as the listening audience knows, is dealing with the loss of his mother and the preparation for her services. Again, my condolences and prayers go out to Brother Richard and his family, and he'll be joining the Time for Awakening family again once once he feels as though he's ready. I spoke with him today, and still getting things together, and it's usually a hectic time for families when this happens, to especially to a mother or a father, you know, searching for papers, searching for insurances, getting things together. So I spoke with Richard today, and you know, offered anything that I can do to help him. But my prayers and condolences go out to Brother Richard and his family, and he'll get back to us and join us when he is able. But we'll be moving on because, it's always things to talk about. The listening audience is there, and I'm still in transition. Things will be kind of calming down for me, I guess, within the next couple of weeks. Be a little more stable where I can get things together. Right now, things are kind of piecemeal. The studio I was at, and now I'm kind of moving things around, so it's a lot of things that you can't see it because we're on the radio, but it's a lot of things that are a little in disarray here, but I'll kind of get things back to like I want it, at least within the next couple of weeks. I think on July 29th, we'll be joined by Brother Oba Olayinka. Brother Oba is always doing things here locally in Philadelphia. On August 4th, again, is the African Independence Day celebration. It's a flyer that he sent to me, but he'll be here to talk about things and talk about some of the guests that are there, some of the things that they're doing. Let me read from this flyer. Philly's midsummer tradition continues. Join us on Saturday, August 4th for the 14th annual African Independence Day celebration and African Independence Day Mayat celebration. August 4th, 2018. Africa Forever, presented by the African Independence Day Organizing Committee and the Urban Shaman Productions, which will take place at Malcolm X Memorial Park, located in Philadelphia, 52nd and Pine Street. The times is from 12 to 8 p.m. Featuring the United Front, African Insurrection Music, the Irritated Genie will be there, the Urban Shamans, the Universal African Dance and Drum Ensemble, Kamara African Arts and Dance and Drum Ensemble, UNIA, ACL, Mama Pam Africa will be there. the Akumba House Initiative. I think they'll be announcing a big initiative that's going to be going on in Philadelphia where we can start doing some things here. I won't drop that yet because they'll be coming on the program also to announce that. Professor Carl Tone Jones, he's scheduled to join us too. He might join us when Brother Oba is with us. And many, many more guests, special guests will be there, as well as the recipient of the 2018 Ahmed Tahir Pearl of Africa Award. There will also be a traditional African marketplace, children's pavilion, health and wellness pavilion, and educational pavilions in our annual African fashion show, as the event is also to honor and commemorate in commemoration of Black August. For more information about vending, volunteering, performing, or presenting, you can contact them at 267-521-1544. That's 267-521-1544, or email them at africanindependenceday@gmail.com. Again, that's africanindependenceday@gmail.com. They also have a webpage that you can check out. That's africanindependenceday.org. Again, that webpage is africanindependenceday.org. And again, Brother Oba will be joining us. I think the schedule is July 29th to talk about things and kind of a preview what's going to go on there at the African Independence Day celebration. Again, tonight we were scheduled to have a special guest join us, an international guest, but I guess he might be having a little difficulty. But that's no problem. We'll continue to move forward. We'll just transition into open forum. Again, I'm not situated like I want to be because I usually have everything situated, my printers, all the information, different topics that I want to throw out there. But I'm not situated like that yet. Just give me a couple of more weeks and I'll be back to how I want to and how I've always presented Time for Awakening. So just be a little patient with me, listening audience. We'll just transition into open forum with a few topics out there. You know, we talked a little bit on Friday, and we did have some callers that was kind of left on the line. So this is the opportunity to get in early if they want to get involved in the conversation. We talked a little bit about this scourge of violence going on in our communities, and it kind of all ties in. It all coincides. We have another shooting, this time in Chicago, by police. And as some of these shootings have recently been, it's another shooting in the back. I'm going to read from this published report that came out 8 hours ago. Everything we want to know about the father gunned down by the Chicago cop. Witnesses have different accounts from the police about the killing. The article is written by Nigel Roberts of News One. Hold on 1 second here. Let me get this straight. The article was written by Nigel Roberts of News One. The man reportedly shot in the back and killed by Chicago police officer Saturday on Chicago's South Side was named Tommy. But those who knew him called him Snoop the Barber. He was a businessman, local businessman, a barber. Witnesses told Chicago Sun-Times reporter Nader Issa. He was a cool, laid-back, very intelligent gentleman, says Gloria Range, who had been a regular customer of the barber for the past 5 years and watched him get gunned down. Another customer recalled that Tommy would bring his 5-year-old daughter everywhere. Fortunately, she wasn't with her father on Saturday. Police officers on patrol on the South Shore neighborhood became suspicious of a man because he was, according to them, exhibiting characteristics of an armed person, the Chicago police said, according to USA Today. They observed something that they could have been a weapon in his pants. When the cops approached to investigate, he pushed their hands away, according to them, and fled while reaching for his weapon. Investigators recovered a semi-automatic gun at the scene, and he did have a permit to carry a concealed weapon. However, witnesses gave a different account. the man's gun was holstered. He did not try to reach for it while running away from the confrontation. It all started when officers told him to stop selling loose cigarettes, which he denied doing. He was handing a few cigarettes to his aunt. He ran away after the argument started with the cops, and a female officer shot him in the back. Protesters gathered at the scene shortly after the shooting. Demonstrators threw rocks and bottles at officers, who responded by scuffling with protesters, according to the police. Who do you serve? Who do you protect? Many in the crowd chanted. We ain't trying to hurt nobody. We just trying to live decent lives, the protesters shouted. The police arrested four demonstrators late Saturday, and up to four officers was injured, according to police. Meanwhile, the city's Civilian Police Review Accountability Board is investigating the shooting, and police placed the officer who killed the man on death duty. So again, we see this type of stuff happening, and this time a businessman, a neighborhood businessman, shot in the back by officers. Again, we're going to continue this conversation in open forum. This is open forum, so you can get involved in anything you want by just calling. I have a good friend of mine that's a doctor of psychology, Dr. Carlton Payne, that might weigh in on this topic of violence. I spoke with him about it over the weekend, and we were just kicking around some things, because as a black psychologist, he always has a different perspective on a lot of things that deals with the mind. That's his field of expertise. And this thing is definitely mental, and it comes out in a physical behavior. But it's always good to go to the source. I like dealing with him and talking with him, because I get a lot of tips on how to approach these subjects by talking with him. Let me read just a little bit here. It's from an article called American Heritage, and it's talking about website is AmericanHeritage.com. Writings on history, travel, food, and culture since 1949. And the topic by this writer, David Courtwright, is about violence. I want to read a couple of paragraphs here in reference to what he's writing in reference to violence in America. If I can find out where I bookmarked at. Give me 1 second to scroll down here. Because again, I'm not situated like I want to be. Let me see here. I might have to take a brief break so I can find out where I was looking. Let me, I see one of the bookmarks here. Let me pick up on this article here. This writer at AmericanHeritage.com wrote about violence. He said European immigrants who came without legal or financial fetters were more likely to arrive in family groups. But even among them, there was a surplus of prime age male workers, not only from post-famine Ireland. Many were economic and marital prospects for young rural women who were particularly, prospects were particularly bleak. And it was more females than male immigrants. And these are, keep in mind, they're talking about whites in this article. And just then, male minorities were the norm, at least prior to the immigration restriction laws of 1920. A criminal history has thus been played out with a bad hand of cards dealt and stacked in this demographic deck. Let me drop down a little bit to some of the things that I wanted to point out here. It says, to be sure, this demographic leaning could be worsened by cultural dispositions. Southerners, frontiersmen were often contemptuous of other races and touchy about their personal honor, which they might sometimes defend by violent means. Now, keep in mind that this article is talking about white immigrants who came to this country. And let me start that paragraph again. To be sure, this demographic, talking about more males coming into this country than women, this demographic leaning could be worsened by cultural dispositions. Southerners and frontiersmen were often more contemptuous of other races and touchy about their personal honor, which they might sometimes defend by violent means. Other ethnic groups, notably Irish, drank a great deal of hard liquor. Irish brawls was no myth. New York City coroners record from 1865 to 1873 show that 42% of homicide victims were Irish born, and only 21% of the city's population, and they were only 21% of the city's population in 1870. Let me read that again. Irish brawls was no myth. New York City coroners record from 1865 to 1873 that 42% of homicide victims were Irish, and they were only 21% of the city's population in 1870. Much of the carnage, Irish or otherwise, occurred in places of commercialized vice, such as gambling halls and bars. Arguments over table stakes, prostitutes, it gave multiple opportunities for violent conflicts, and the guns and knives men carried increased the likelihood of fatal results. When killings did occur, the police and courts were often unable or indisposed to deal effectively with it. Churches and revivals helped some, but their influence was felt least by the lower class men who resisted religious conversion. And feminized style of life they often associated it with. And keep in mind, this is talking about whites. They're not talking about blacks here in particular, in this particular paragraph I'm reading. Now, check this out. These cultural and social characteristics together with abnormal structure of the population guaranteed that American society would suffer from violence and disorder. But not only would it do so in this ununiform fashion, the ingredients for trouble, young bachelors sensitive about honor, racial hostilities, heavy drinking, religious differences, group indulgence in vice, gun carrying, and inadequate law enforcement were concentrated on the frontier. An expanding subnature of immigrants within a larger nation of immigrants, the frontier was the most youthful, masculine region of the country and consequently one of the most susceptible to violence. The more remote and unsuited for family farming of the frontier region was, the more likely it was to attract subservient, boisterous young males. The classic example is California during the gold rush. 89,000 eager gold seekers from all over the world arrived in California in 1849. Particularly, all 95% of them were men. Within 6 months, one in every five of them was dead. An astonishing statistic, given that almost all that started the journey were in good health and in prime years. So many died by violent means that insurance companies refused to write new policies for Californians or charge substantially additional premiums for those that they covered. Now, again, you see here that it's talking about the frontier West in this country. And it said that during the gold rush of 1849, that over 89,000 people arrived in California in 1849, and they said 95% of them were male. Within 6 months, one of every five of that 89,000 were dead. So you can see here that the origin of violence, and hold it. Let me read. It was something else I wanted to read in relation to that. And I hope I can find it, because it compared those statistics with statistics in Philadelphia. It mentioned another city, too. I might have to take a break because I wanted to share that. It can compare those statistics with some cities that were inhabited at that time by black folks. Oh, here it is. Here it is. Here it is. Here it is. It's still talking about the violence that happened in the frontier area and the homicides per 100,000. It says non or post-frontier regions with proportionately fewer men suffered far less homicidal violence. Henderson County, a town in western Illinois, had an average murder rate of 4.3 per 100,000 during the period of 1856 to 1900. Just 19 killings in more than 40 years. Two eastern cities whose records have been analyzed, Philadelphia was one of them, had a criminal homicide rate of 5.8 and 3.2% in 2 decades after 1860. By comparison, the average rates of Boston and Philadelphia in the early 1900s were only 19% and 28% respectively. So the reason I'm mentioning that, Philadelphia in particular, always had a large black population, even from the earliest. So you see here that homicide rates, even among the black population at that time, were very low. But white homicide rates, and this is before the turn of the 20th century. I'm talking that they're giving rates from the 1865 on. The homicide rates, and especially in those frontier areas among whites, was off the charts. And it gave instances why it would be off the charts. So it's something that has happened between our people and the system that they live under, because all this stuff is socially engineered, how this homicide rate has flipped the script. And also the media is involved, too, because it promotes these homicides among black people, like black folks is the only ones committing killings here in urban areas. But let me reach out to Dr. Carlton Payne, psychologist, doctor of psychology, Dr. Carlton Payne, to get him to weigh in on this particular topic. But you can call, too, and talk about anything that you want by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Dr. Payne, how are you, sir?
Good evening. How are you doing, Brother Brooks?
Great. Dr. Payne, listen.
I want to give my condolences to Brother Richard first before we get started. It's always a hard thing, and I'm sure he has the internal strength to survive this difficult time in his life.
Yeah, I'm quite sure that he's probably listening, or one of the family members to convey that to him. Dr. Payne, you know, I talked on Friday on the program about the violence in our communities, which in some of these neighborhoods is out of control. And I always like to look at these things, and I kind of take pages from you and other black psychologist that we've had on this program, Joy DeGruy and others. Dr. Hare was on the program, and I talked with him in private conversations. You always got to go to the source when you're dealing with something that comes out in behavior. You know this because this is your profession. When you go to the source of this violence in our communities, what assessment do you come up with? Now, before you weigh in on this, I just want to say that the average person, when they see this stuff on the television, the first thing that they think in their minds is that that's all black folks do in these communities is kill one another. and look for opportunities to rob one another, hit one another upside the head, and the ultimate end up killing somebody. It doesn't work like that in the mind. Talk about the origin of some of this behavior and your assessments.
Well, the human mind is a magnificent device. It could be stronger than steel or could be as fragile as a piece of fine crystal. But one thing that a psychologist knows that behavior can be manipulated. See, a belief system and behavior are connected like a hand in a glove. And a lot of psychologists know that right away. They go right to, when you want to find out where behavior is coming from, the first thing you do is look at what the person believes. And the two things cannot be separated. So in order to, the way the system is set up in this country, they try to change the behavior. But the behavior is simply a reflection. So it'd be like if you have a spot on your jacket and you're trying to wipe the spot off on the mirror rather than actually getting the spot. So when I was back in grad school, I went to grad school at Villanova, and we did an experiment with mice. There was a large cage, big laboratory in a large cage, and it was full of mice. And we gave the mice plenty of water, enough room, plenty of food. And they worked together. They reproduced. They did a lot of things. We did this over a period of months. Then we cut the size of the cage in half. We cut the water in half, and we cut the food in half. And you never guess what the mice started doing. They started killing each other. They started robbing each other. They started raping each other because it was a minimal amount of resources, and they were competing for it. So if you look at the African-American community, we think in terms, a lot of times we think in terms of tomorrow. But the people who are dictating our lives think of them in terms of decades. Look at the prison that was just completed, the new physics, the Phoenix prison. That was a 10-year project. They projected 10 years ago that facility would be full. And if you looked at the documents for that facility, they said the average age of the inmates would be between 18 and 24. 10 years ago, that 18-year-old was how old?
What, the 4 years old?
He was only 8 years old.
Okay,
so they had a bed ready for that 8-year-old. They had projected that 8-year-old would end up in prison. So it's planning. It's pre-prepared planning. And so us as a change agents have to pass this information on to the people around us, that we are being manipulated. And that's where these behaviors come from. I often do this with my students. I hear this in Black media a lot. The only people I see who are robbing and breaking into my house are Black people. I tell them to go back to an old television series, the Roots television series, and go on YouTube and look at that original scene where it was a dramatic scene. Kunta Kinte is being whipped into submission to say his name is Toby. And I always asked, and they never even noticed that. I said, who is whipping Kunta? And they say it's a white guy. No, if you look at it, it's a Black man who has the whip. He may be doing the whipping, but he is not the one controlling the whip. Does that make sense to you?
Okay. All right.
Yes. So what you're reporting is, if you look at statistics, the prison population for African Americans in the 20s and 30s was almost negligible. People didn't go to prison. Go back in the 1920s and 30s, we were the George Raft and people like that. Those were the prisons. They called them cons. They called them convicts. And the prisons were full of those people. They were the violent people. And as Black people started to move into the greater society, that's when this thing started happening.
Now hold it, because I don't want to cut you. You said early on, early in the 20th century, Black people didn't go to prison. So, and Black folks weren't angels. I'm quite sure it was crimes that were committed. But you're talking about crimes, or you're talking about a scourge of violence and crimes among Black folks. Is that what you're saying?
Well, we were under so much oppression. Something called the Inmate Lend-Lease Program. So, it was these crazy Black laws where you would get arrested for walking along train tracks. Like during the Great Northern Migration, 6 million black people came from the South, and the Caucasian, the people of power did not want those people doing that. So they would be arrested for walking in groups. They would be arrested for walking along railroad tracks. They'd be arrested for loitering, for not having any money in their pocket. But they weren't going to jail and prison. They would be put right back on the same plantation. So the prison population for blacks was negligible at that point.
Okay. Okay.
So as we started moving into the greater society, as we started moving south, they call it, they called it being citified. They started picking up some of the negative behaviors of the oppressor. It's reactions to oppression, and one of them is identification, taking on the behaviors, mannerisms, and ideas of the person who is oppressing you. So that's where a lot of these behaviors have come from. These behaviors have been manipulated, and it's time for us, for our people, to start seeing what's going on and where this is coming from.
You know, when you talk about the manipulation, and I just gave some examples that I see as far as the use of the television, the use of mass media, giving the people the impression that negative behaviors, the drug selling, the use of drugs, violence is being committed by black people. Talk about the ways to combat this. I always say that education is the best teacher, and especially cultural education, and knowing who you are and knowing what has happened to our people and knowing our situation. What you're describing is a systematic situation that is geared against us. When you know these things, you can prepare better. Talk about, from your estimation, what are some of the best things to combat these type of notions and behaviors being generated?
Number one is this. This is going to be a 10 to 15 year process. We tend to have a fast food mentality. We want to fix it we want to fix it right away.
Okay.
We want to fix it today, but we have to resolve ourselves. This is going to be a 10 to 15 year process. This just the way they planned this 10 year process for the prison. That person that we're going to make the change with is now 8 years old. Okay, 8 years old with it's absolutely amazing. I don't know if you remember Dr. Jawanza Kajufu,
mm-hmm.
a brilliant psychologist and brilliant scholar. He coined a term called the fourth grade failure syndrome. And what he said was that African-American children were at the top of the educational level from the time they start school, from preschool to just about the end of third grade, and then they begin to fail. And what age is a kid is at the end of third grade? They're 8 years old, okay? I went to a seminar in Texas, and we talked about the prison, school-to-prison pipeline, and they said to start planning prison cells based on a child's academic performance at 8 years old in third grade. I said, what is going on here? 8 years old over and over again. I said, why is it? So I started doing a little more research. 8 years old is the age where children begin to understand who they are. They begin to form ideas of where they're going to be, who they're going to be. And a lot of times, if you can kind of make that intervention at that age, you can really steer this child in a different direction. But once they get into a certain age, past 10, and they've already had this this perception of who they are, I'm going to be a thug, I'm going to be a hoodlum, it's cool to be this person. It's very difficult to change the course of that child. The textbooks call it the oil tanker approach. An oil tanker is such a huge machine that you have to begin to turn it early as it's approaching the shore. Because if you don't, the momentum will carry it right into the shore and it'll crash. So you have to turn it early before it gets to the shore. And that's the same approach to take with reducing violence in the black community. You have to do early intervention. Now, intergroup aggression is a way of when you look at oppression, people who are oppressed, one of the biggest ways they express that oppression is intergroup aggression. They attack one another. Is that not interesting?
Well, you know what? This gentleman that wrote this article that I read from in the beginning talked about, and he made a point to point out the violence rate among white Irish immigrants that came here and what they were doing among themselves. Even though they said that they made up 42% of the crimes in New York, and they were only 20% of the population in New York during a period of about 20 years from 1865 to, it might have been a little more than 20 years, but it was a period there before 1900 where they made up a huge number of the violent crimes in New York, and even though they were only 20% of the population.
That's almost a mirror image of what's going on now. 10% of the African-American population are for committing 60% of the crime. So when Caucasians throw that statistic at us, they've been beating us over the head with that one. 80% of the murders are committed by African-Americans. What they don't say is what percentage of the population are committing this murder. So everything is kind of geared toward making you feel a certain way. And if you talk to some young people, you'd be surprised at what the effect of this stuff in the media is doing to them. They don't, you know, black is something negative. They don't like being black.
Now, wait a minute, hold it, because I want you to really go into this, because I've seen you talking with young folks in a school setting. I've seen you talking with young people, and I'm talking about young people that's incarcerated. Talk about how they feel in reference to, do they understand their situation? How do they feel about themselves and their people? Give our listening audience a, because I don't know, some of our listening audience might not go to schools and talk with young people, and they definitely might not go to these prisons and talk with groups of young people. Give our listening audience a synopsis of what the system has done to them in their mindset.
It's very interesting. This is very interesting. 15, 20 years ago, I would do intakes on a young person, and I would ask a question, who do you live with and what is your religion? And they would say they live with their mother and they are Baptist, Catholic, Christian, whatever their religion would be. And then, 15 years later, they say, I live with my grandmother and I have no religion. So their mindset has changed. They really don't have an underlying belief system that kind of guides them. They don't have a foundation. Another thing is this sense of acting white, okay? Acting white is going to school or speaking clearly or acting black is quote unquote representing, you know, being hard, being a negativity. For some reason they get that belief system that acting black is this negative thing, you know. But that did not come from other black people. That came from the oppressor. There's ways of surviving an oppressive environment. And one is identification. These are the people that you see, Jesse Lee Peterson and Juan Williams. They take on the ideas, beliefs, and behaviors of the oppressor. This is a way of surviving, okay? Then another one is escapism. That's people who are using drugs, medication, to kind of get out of the system. They kind of escape from reality. One that you see is rebellion. And some of your callers are like, they take on the system, they fight the power, which is, I think, is praiseworthy. And then one is intergroup aggression. So a lot of times this identification takes over with everything that black is wrong. You know, I actually had a student to tell me he would, if he came back in another life, he'd be anything but black. And they don't view it as they treat me wrong because something's wrong with them. They'll say they treat me bad because I'm black. That statement means a lot.
Wow. Listen, let's take a brief break, and when we come back, we're going to continue the conversation. And it's open forum, so you can get involved in any way that you see fit. We're talking about violence, and particularly violence among our community, the origins of it, and what we can do to stop this. We're in conversation with Dr. Calden Payne, a doctor of psychology, Dr. Calden Payne, and we'll be right back. You can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We got a call on hold. We'll get you right after the break. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
What is in 1 million brothers and sisters who are tired of the same old rhetoric, the same old leaders, the same old ways of dealing with political and economic empowerment? You realize that nobody's going to save black people but us. If you understand that no existing political party prioritizes the best interests of African Americans as a collective, if you believe that leadership is as leadership does, and this means that the best leaders for the black collective must come from the ranks of those who place and hold the best interests of black people foremost and uttermost, if you understand that black people must develop the mindset and the will to finance their own racial uplift organizational efforts, then get involved with 1 million conscious black voters and contributors. The movement is now. Go to www.iamoneofthemillion.com. That's www.iamoneofthemillion.com.
Right. A long time ago, we were talking about television and doing it on the radio. What we did was to help our generation realize they got to get out there and get busy because it wasn't going to be televised. We got respect for young rappers and the way they freeway in. But if you're going to be teaching folks things, be sure you know what you're saying. Older folks in our neighborhood got plenty of know-how. Remember, if it wasn't for them, we wouldn't be out there now. And I ain't coming at you with no disrespect. All I'm saying is that you damn well got to be correct. Because if you're going to be speaking for a whole generation, and you know enough to try and handle their education, be sure you know the real deal about past situations and ain't just repeating what you heard on a local TV station. Sometimes they tell lies and put them in a truthful disguise. But the truth is, that's why we said it wouldn't be televised. They don't know what to say to our young folks, but they know that you do. And if they really knew the truth, why would they tell you? pride. The first sign is peace. Tell all them gun-toting young brothers that the man is glad to see us out there killing one another. We raised too much hell when they were shooting us down, so they started poisoning our minds and trying to jerk us all around. And then they tell us we got to come in and control our situation. They want half of us on dope and the other half in incarceration. If the ones they want dead ain't killed by what they instigated, they can put some dope on the brother's body and claim it was drug-related. Tell them drug-related means there don't need to be no investigation, or at least that's the way they're going to play it on the local TV station. All your 9mm brothers, give them something to think about. Tell them you heard that this is the new word. They got to work that stuff out. Because somehow they're feeling the wrong way with a gun in their hands. They're feeling real independent, but they're just pulling contracts with a man. 5 and 5 will tell you it's hopeless out there on the avenue. But if they really knew the truth, why would they tell you? And if they look at you like you're insane and they start calling you scarecrow and say you ain't got no brain, or start telling folks that you suddenly gone lame, or that white folks have finally cooperated your game, or worse yet, implying that you don't really know. That's the same thing they said about us a long time ago. Young rappers, one more suggestion before I get out of your way. But I appreciate the respect you give me and what you got to say. I'm saying protect your community and spread that respect around. Tell brothers and sisters they got to calm that bullshit down. Because we're terrorizing our old folks and we brought fear into our homes. And they ain't got to hang out with the senior citizens. Just tell them, damn it, leave the old folks alone. And we know who ripping off the neighborhood. Tell them that BS ain't got to stop. Tell them you're sorry they can't handle it out there, but they got to take the crime off the block. And they look at you like they think you're insane, or start calling you scarecrow thinking you ain't got no brain, or start telling folks that you suddenly gone lame, or that white folks have suddenly co-opted your game, or worse yet, saying that you really don't know. That's the same thing they said about me a long time ago. And if they tell folks that you finally lost your nerve, that's the same thing they said about us when we said Johannesburg. But I think you young folks need to know that things don't go both ways. Can't talk respect on every other song or just every other day. What I'm speaking on now is the raps about the women folks. On one song, she's your African queen, and on the next one, she's a joke. And you ain't said no words that I haven't heard, but that ain't no compliment. It only insults 8 people out of 10 and questions your intelligence. 4-letter words or 4-syllable words won't make you a poet. It will only magnify how shallow you are and let everybody know it. They look at you like they think you're insane, or they call you scarecrow thinking you ain't got no brain, or start telling folks that you suddenly gone lame, or that the white folks have finally co-opted your game, or you really don't know. They said that about me a long time ago. If they finally start telling people that you lost your nerve, that's what they said about Johannesburg. You ain't insane. You have got a brain. You haven't gone lame. You have got your game. Remember, keep the nerve. Keep the nerve. Keep the nerve. Keep the nerve.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 8 o'clock here in the city of Philadelphia, and we're in open forum this evening. You can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're talking about violence, solutions to stop this violence, and we're talking about it with Doctor of Psychology, Dr. Carlton Payne. Dr. Payne, before I go to, because we got a call on, two calls on hold, before I go to the callers, I want you to, because you gave an example of a formula by Dr. Juwanza Kanjufu, or what he stated, and you equated it with the way they start attacking black people and the age. To talk about again that age of 8 years old, because I think it's something key that you said there, and it might be a strategy where our people can use to start trying to combat this problem. To talk about that age and why it's so key.
8 years old is the age when a young man begins to see who he is. From the time that they're young, when they start first forming, they take on the beliefs and ideas of their parents. If you talk to a kid about, you know, who they would vote for in an election, they kind of mimic what their parents say. But around 8 years old, the kid starts changing. Well, my teacher said it's more like this, or, you know, the world looks more like that to me. They, you know, this is the kind of car I would want. Before, they would say, this is the kind of car my father has or my mother has. So they start to begin to form ideas of their own. And if you look at some of the old behaviorist scientists, they know this from the Skinner box. The projects was really a gigantic Skinner box with mice. These things have been done well before they were put on people. Theorists developed the theory first, and then they implement it. So the future of Black America has already been planned for generations. And so this is where Black people,
now let me see this. You mean the intended future, what they really want to happen?
Exactly.
Okay, go ahead.
Exactly.
Okay, go ahead.
So I can kind of change the direction of your children, make them think a different way, make them their values different. You know, you value Madison Avenue, and you value sneakers, and you value this. I can almost gear what your behaviors are going to be. I can almost predict what your behaviors are going to be. And I can do this through media. I can do this through music. I can do this through television. I can change your belief system. Therefore, I can change your behavior. And that has been well known for centuries.
Wow. Okay. Let's. That is a blueprint to how we can attack this this scourge. Because generally, you know, a lot of the discussion groups, and you've been around the different people having community talks, and you see an age dynamic there, and sometimes it's people 35, sometimes 45, sometimes 55 and above are usually at these sessions. But what you're saying is some of these sessions need to be geared towards young people, and I'm talking about 6 to 10 in that range, is what you're saying.
Well, yes, because they will get an understanding of what they're being shown or what they're being taught may not be true. Because when you're younger, you tend to believe what adults say. You know, the world works this way, the world is this way, and that's why it's so important to have that parent at home to guide you. And a lot of times that working mother, she's working 16, 18 hours, so he is not getting his guidance from that parent. I used to note that there were some guys in the neighborhood, and this was interesting growing up. I was lucky enough to be raised by both parents, but I noticed the guys who didn't have that father in the household, they would look up to some of the neighborhood guys. And one quote I'll never forget, a man is not a man until he's been to prison. I actually heard, you know, that being taught on the playground. So that was the place where you become a man if you go to jail. So what if that gets into when you're a kid, you're 6, 7, 8 years old, and that becomes your belief system? Or every Black man in America goes to prison. I have adults who actually believe that because they were taught that from the time they were children. So if that's your belief system, what do you think your behavior is going to be? You're not going to live past 18 years old. If you feel that if you believe that you're not going to live past 18, your behaviors will be according to that belief system. You see how those things work? If I'm not going to make it to 18, why should I go to school? Why should I do well in school? Why should I get married? Why should I seek to buy a household? Because I'm not going to make it past 18 anyway. So then those who are, and I've been around people who they've gotten past their 18th birthday, and they simply can't believe it. Now they screwed up the whole foundation of their life because they never thought they were going to be past 18. Then they were going to live past 18. So see how everything works together. By impacting upon that belief system.
You know, it kind of, because you reflected back to when you were young, and I'm looking at my parents, and I was in a household with two parents, two loving parents. It was certain music that they didn't want me to listen to, and they didn't allow me to play in the house. It was certain television shows that I wasn't allowed to watch. Sure, you get to a certain age, you go and do what you sneak and do what you want to do. But I'm talking about the guidance that came from a home. But now in some of our homes, you have a dynamic of younger parents that let the children watch anything they want on television. They definitely let them hear all types of crazy music. And what you're saying is that stuff is programming our children.
Yes. Exactly. From what you wear. I don't know if you've seen this, but a grown man, an adult, a man of years who still dresses like a child, he hasn't grown into manhood yet. So what kind of message is he sending to people behind him? That I still haven't grown up. So how can you teach a younger person if you're not an adult yet? I'm working on a book, and it's written toward young African American women, and the book is he a man or is he a big boy? And it's very important for women who are seeking a life mate to understand that the difference between a man and a big boy, a male in an adult's body. And the question I get in seminars is this: how do you tell the difference? Well, one way to really tell is how he behaves, how he carries himself. Does he compete with you? Is he able to talk with you? A man stands up. A man speaks up. A man steps up. But most importantly, a man knows how to treat a woman. He hangs in there. He works with her. And he does what it takes to keep his family together. Does that make sense to you?
Certainly. Certainly.
Yes. And I often get that question, you know, and, you know, does he put other people down or does he go after what he wants in life? And a lot of young women, the room kind of gets quiet when I'm in a room of young women, because a lot of them are seeking those life mates. They really don't know how to pick that person. But it's very important how to pick that life mate, and that will reflect on the next generation.
You know, it's kind of, and I'm going to talk about this, you know, after I get these callers involved. It's kind of funny that you mentioned this and talking to young black women, because if you let the media tell our black women or the young black women, the media is telling young black women that these young boys are gay or adopting a alternative lifestyle, that they're headed to prison, or that you need to seek a white male. That's what the media is telling them. So I just wanted to throw that in there in reference to what you were saying.
That's very interesting. It's very interesting. You're starting to see that. You're starting to see a lot of mixed race commercials.
Oh, so.
And the media is sending a sublim. Now, if you go back and read some of the old psych books, that used to be illegal, where they would have pictures of popcorn or desert flashed in between the pictures. So to encourage subliminally sending messages to your subconscious mind to make you thirsty, and if that became illegal. But now they're actually doing it directly on television. This is what is good. This is what is bad. This is what is acceptable. This is what is not. And our people are accepting it.
Now, you said that was illegal. Now, from what I understand.
It became illegal.
Now, from what I understand, they would do it so quickly that the average eye couldn't pick it up. Am I right with that?
Yes. But it still would go into the subconscious mind. And you would behave a certain way, and you wouldn't realize what it was.
Okay.
Why am I thirsty? So it works the same exact way.
Okay.
You're All being right. taught, and you're being shown what is important. You know, you must – the difference between a want and a need – you need to have this car to be happy. I don't know if you notice, like, especially on some of the black stations, they'll have this car and they'll have this nice music, and the guy will be driving the car, and a beautiful woman will come up to him, and women will talk to you now, and you'll be there because you have this expensive car. So you must get this car in order to be happy or to be successful. And they're showing you exactly what you're supposed to be doing, and our people will emulate that.
Wait a minute, hold it. So you always see a different dynamic. What you described, I want our callers to really look at this. What you described, you see it all the time, and especially if you look at some of the stations that are considered black stations. But if you look at some of these other stations, you don't see that type of dynamic being displayed.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Where a white boy is driving an expensive car, and this is how he shows his manhood by driving it. You don't see that type of dynamic played out. When they advertise a car and they're doing it towards a, it's always a white family at the car dealership. A guy's there and talk about getting this particular car and his family's in it. It's a different dynamic.
But for you, it's you notice the television, the music goes up. It's louder music. It's a lot of movement. It's a lot of action. They flash the car. They show him, and they show him drive by, and the women are looking at him. And you say, oh, this is how you express your manhood. Now, what I said earlier, the difference between a want and a need. A need is air. Without air, you'll die. Without water, you die. Without food, you die. But a car is not a need. You will survive. But when you miss, you replace a want with a need, you do anything to get it. So I need this car, and they will do anything to get it. So you see how psychology works? So if I got to get that movie, Get Rich or Die Trying, I'm going to do anything I can to get this thing. And if I end up getting arrested, I go to jail, something happens to me, I don't care, because it's a need. I have to have it because I've been taught that, and it's in my subconscious mind.
Let's go to a couple callers here. Let's go to 404. Are you there?
Hello?
Yes.
Hey, how you doing?
Great.
That's interesting what's being discussed and the age group that he was speaking of, because I was just thinking about something from when I tuned in. It made me think about how I was working with middle school children this summer, and something came up. We were, you know, I was circling up with them on occasion just to kind of talk with them, see what's on their mind. Talk about our community and things like that. And I guess I was doing some, I was asking them about their ideal communities, and I was writing everything down they were saying. You know, I was encouraging their ideas, and I was taking a look at everything that was said, and I was letting them know that the reason why I'm doing such a thing is because these are the types of things that I look forward to seeing you all create in about 10 years. And they, a young man said to me, and this young man was, it was interesting, it was him, because this guy was the most popular of them all, the most athletic. He said, but why are you putting all of this into us and you having these high expectations for us for something 10 years from now when you don't even know if I'm going to be alive? So now, why are you even bothering about it? And I was like,
now, how old was he, brother?
And this was, these were a group of kids that were going from seventh grade to eighth grade.
Okay.
So I would guess,
13,
talking about 12 years old or 13 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really stumped when it was said to me, because, you know, for a moment I was at a loss for words, because the way that he addressed me and the way that he looked at me while he was saying it, it seemed as though he was really for real. And I didn't know what I could do to undo. In that moment, I didn't know. I felt a little powerless. I didn't know how to undo that within their mind, or if it was even possible for me to reverse that. I mean, just in that instant, because, you know, in that instant, you're supposed to come back with the right thing to say. And I was just...
Not necessarily. Let me share something with you, my brother. You sound like a good brother. when you're working with children at that age, the first thing to do is just listen. Let the kid keep going with that, because you do a couple of things when a kid when you listen to a kid. First of all, very few kids have an adult African-American male listen to them. I hear that so much. I really don't get a chance to talk to an adult African-American male. So you're not really telling them what to do. You're listening to them.
Right.
When you're listening to them, you gain a big thing. You gain something very big. You gain their trust. They say, oh.
Right.
And so once you gain their trust, they're more willing to take your advice. The second thing you learn from them is you learn what they believe. You say, man, this kid actually believes this. You ought to hear some of the things that what they believe about marriage, they believe about women, what they believe about life, what they believe about the president. You'd be shocked at some of the stuff that young people actually believe. So that'll give you a foothold, and it'll give you a direction where to go with them. You know? So in that thing, get a little more information from the young person. You know, why do you think, you know, ask the question, why do you think? And it's called an open-ended question, a question that you can't answer yes or no. Why do you think you're not going to be around in 10 years? And then let him go. You'll get so much information out of that. And they'll, you know, because my uncle or my brother, they'll give you so – and then you'll know exactly what to do. It'll give you a roadmap of where to go with that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, just add an extra question, and you'll get more information.
Yeah, because I've heard that said before, but I've never had anyone – speak to me directly and tell me and look me eye to eye and tell me like that he truly believes that he's not going to be here 10
it's
years.
Amazing.
And it was amazing to me because here I am every day. Here I am every day. You know, I'm analyzing the children like we do as adults. We love the young black children, and we watch them, and we look at, oh, how this one carries themselves. And you kind of start looking into their future, and you start seeing things in them that like maybe they don't see yet. And that, like, that's what I'm dealing with every day. So every day I'm just impressed by them. I'm looking at them and I'm saying, yeah, this person right here, that characteristic that she has, that's going to probably work good in, you know, in this field or whatever. And then I'm looking at this young man, I'm saying that characteristic he has, yeah, that's going to carry him over. He's probably going to be an entrepreneur one day or something like that. And so I saw so many things in these students, and when they said that to me, it was just like
shocking.
Yeah, it shocked me because I saw so much. I saw so much greatness in them. I didn't think that they thought that. You know what I'm saying? Like, I know that there are some kids that are totally defeated, but I didn't think the one that walks around, that carries themselves confidently, that really that is very popular, that talks about a lot of things that they want to do. I thought that those children at least saw themselves still being alive.
You're hitting it right on the head. You're talking about something I see every day. You see, slavery impacted upon our people with a much greater degree than we actually think. Because we have become what I call crustaceans. Crustaceans, their skeleton is on the outside, and their skin is on the inside, the opposite of humans. And so what you're seeing is that exoskeleton, that confidence that's not really there. Confidence comes from the inside, and you see it on the outside. But you can also fake it. You can make it look like it's real. And that's what you're seeing. And that's what Brother Bookwood had asked me a question. That's the change we have to make. We have to take that confidence and put it back on the inside. They build that endoskeleton where it's not that sense of defeat. And let me give you an example. Let's go back in history. You have two houses. You have a black house and you have a white house, okay? And they look just alike. They look very similar, except the black house had 300 years of termites eating at the infrastructure, okay? And then in 1865, they come in and they spray bug spray and they kill all the termites. And they say, okay, we're exactly the same. But it's not even close because the infrastructure is damaged. So as the decades go by, the house will begin to crumble because the infrastructure, the termites were killed, but the infrastructure was never repaired. Does that make sense to both of you?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that's what you're saying. That's what's going on.
Hey, brother, listen, I'm going to thank you for your contribution, man. Any more? Did you have something else you want to say before you we move on?
Nah,
please, give us more. Really, you're...
The reason why I brought it up is because it had been bothering me, because I felt that if we're at a stage where we're kind of looking towards our future, you're at that age when you're starting to think about what kind of career do I want to have or what do I want to do. And I just felt that if a person feels this way about themselves and their life, then I can't see them making too much of an investment into their future. Like, as far as, like, I was just really scared for them. Like, I was scared that they're going to not do well when they get to high school. They're going to not do things to make themselves have the edge to be hireable or to acquire. I just was really, really scared for them when I realized that this is the way that they all felt.
Well, again, and you know, just like Dr. Payne said, that's the intended outcome of what this system intends for our children. But we can counteract that by things that you're doing. You're expressing to the listening audience some of the strategy that's needed. The things you're doing is a remedy to that situation. Talking with them, letting them know, because he's already been programmed, semi-programmed, by stuff that we're talking about already. When he said that to you, that you're telling me this, but you don't know whether I'm going to be here 10 years from now. He's 13 or 12 years old saying things like that. So,
he's telling you he doesn't know if he's going to be here 10 years from now. So he's expressing his sense of doubt. But one thing I like to tell you, that they're very lucky children to have someone like you around them. Someone, because a mentor is a valuable, valuable person to have. Like you said earlier, a mentor can see things in you that you don't see in yourself. And a mentor can be encouraging and supportive. And I think that's what you're doing. So I want you to keep on doing what you're doing. Keep on giving the information to them, because change belief to knowledge. And that's one way of offsetting some of the damage that's being done.
Hey, thanks, brother, for your contribution, man.
All right, y'all have a good evening.
Peace.
Thank you.
Let's go to 487. 478, I'm sorry. 478.
Hello, thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
Good evening, gentlemen. I have a couple of questions. Well, I have two questions. One, before the doctor, I'm sorry, I didn't get your name. Before the doctor came on, Brother Elliot was talking about the white people and their violence and stuff. And one of the things he brought about was that a lot of those people were immigrants, or like frontiersmen going places on their own without women. And I know nowadays in the black community, there are a lot of, well, I'll say females. Maybe they don't think they're women, and that's an issue. I don't know. So I had a question about that, like that difference in nowadays where there are more females in the community. It's not like these young men, a lot of them are migrating. And I know you hear about, like, the black immigrant population, how they're not coming here committing a lot of crimes. And, well, reportedly, you know, everything is can be skewed. And second, the effect of video games, because I know I'm in my 40s, and when I was little, you know, we used to play outside a little bit. Then I'm from New York, then the crack hit, and I had to go inside, and, you know, that was the end of that. Within the video games, and, like, you know, maybe they don't even see other little girls, because no one's outside. I noticed that. The kids don't even play outside anymore. Those two things I have a question about. And I'm going to take that metaphor about the house. That was a good one.
Thank you. Well, what you're talking about is socialization skills. I have work with teenagers, and they don't go through that with the girl. They that thing when you were a teenager and you first meet the girl and you dial the first three numbers of her number and you get scared and hang up and that kind of stuff. And they don't go through that stuff. So when they get older,
they haven't developed those skills, that they haven't developed conversational skills. They weren't out, like you said, they weren't outside playing with their little girls, or, you know, everything is text or online meetings. So we're losing a very important part of ourselves. And that is not traditionally our thing. That's taking on, again, the behaviors of the person who is oppressing you, you know, of the oppressor. That's their stuff. And we're taking it and we're adopting it as a means of defending ourselves. We think that, okay, we adopt his ways, we do what he does, we'll be more accepted, or we'll get further. And they will take a few people. Jackie Robinson said this in his book. It's very interesting. He said that he used names like Marian Anderson, himself, and Ralph Bunch. And he said that they present those people and say, see, they made it, why can't you? They give you a few people that who made it. And if you look now, who are they?
Dr. Payne, we're losing your voice. Say that again.
LeBron James, Oprah Winfrey, and they put them in front of you now. They did the same exact thing 50 years ago. They said, okay, they put the carrot in front of you. See, they made it, you know, so why can't you? And that's a way of, you use a few people to control the masses. So what you're talking about is taking on the viewpoints, the perceptions, and the behaviors of the person of people who are oppressing you. And that is the whole secret to maintaining control. So what you're saying about the kids not going outside, that didn't come from our community. That came from the other community. And they're just taking on the same behaviors. So that's something else Brother Elliot was talking about, another way of combating the destruction of African-American community is to not to follow those same behaviors, you know, to have the neighborhood like we had when we were kids, where the kids interact and they talk to each other and the families talk to each other. Let that community do that, and our community must be different. We can't take on the behaviors and mannerisms and postures of the people who are oppressing you.
Okay, thank you. I just had a question about that. And also another thing, I guess they still have those. I've moved the block parties as well. You're right, because I live around white people now. They don't have no, I don't know about, we had block parties. We didn't have a lot of money, but come summer, the block had a party. For what? I don't know. But we had a block party. So, yeah, that's socialization again. It's once a year.
And did you know your neighbor's name growing up? Did you spend time with your neighbor? You know, do you remember when they used to give everybody a can of white paint and you would paint the sidewalk, paint the curb, and everybody kind of knew it, everybody?
No, we didn't. I'm not that old. I don't think I painted the curb.
Well, this is all up to the 80s. People were still doing this, you know?
We played, I'm from New York, we played Double Dutch, and we would get rope from the cable man. The cable man would give us the rope to play rope. Yay.
Okay.
So, the ice cream truck, things like that, yeah.
Now, let me ask you a question, sister. You go through the community now. Do you see the young girls playing Double Dutch?
Well, like I said, I live in a different area, but even before I totally stopped growing up, I haven't seen that in a while.
I know.
No, I'm not going to lie. I live in Macon now. When I first moved here, I lived in an apartment complex, and I was so surprised because the little kids were playing. I was so excited. They had their little bikes. They were going around the complex. The ice cream truck came. It was an anomaly. I couldn't believe it.
Well, so. I mean, you might have been in another type of setting. When I say, you know, maybe an urban, suburban setting, but if you reflect back in the days of your youth, if you go
I was in an urban setting when I was a youth. Urban.
Yeah. Well, if you go back to those same urban areas, you don't see the young girls playing Double Dutch.
Nope, you sure don't. You see white people gentrified.
Well, okay.
That's a whole different show.
I know it. Thank you, sister, for your contribution.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Let's go to 602. 602?
Yes, Brother Elliot, and good evening to the doctor on the radio.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, good brother. You know, in order for America to function, you know, black people have to be out of their mind. See? it's by deliberate design they do it. They have to make black people crazy. We got to be crazy in order for America to function. And as the doctor pointed out about that Skinner experiment, see, the thing with the Skinner experiment was that we were the rat.
You're exactly right.
Yeah, we were the rat in that experiment. You see, and I would like the doctor to talk a little bit about how white and black violence affects black and black violence. You know, if you can touch that a little bit, you know, how white and black violence affects black and black violence.
Very good question. I want you and your listeners to kind of take this one and run with it and take it to heart. When you talk about police shooting unarmed African-American men, you will invariably get this question. But what about black-on-black violence? Black people are killing. The biggest threat against black people is, and they always kind of throw that curveball. But to bring it back to the center, the point to be made is this. It's one thing for the schoolyard bully to beat up a kid. It's a whole different thing for the school principal to beat up a kid, and that's the difference. We allow them. There's a line in the Declaration of Independence, and it says that this government draws its just powers from the consent of the governed. Those are key terms in that document. We, the people, allow you to have governance over us. And when your governance becomes unfair, we will no longer allow. And that's the difference. That's the difference between, quote unquote, black on black crime and white on black crime. We give them authority over us and they're abusing it. And that's the whole issue. That's where everything is. That's where the damage comes from. But they always throw you that smoke screen. Black on black crime becomes the smoke screen to change the argument. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, it make a lot of sense. And what we have to bear in mind also is that, you see, the same educational system, the same curricula that teach white folks to hate black people, teach black people to hate black people. You see, we have been fed the same information, you see. And that mindset, you know, and as you said, they play with the media. You know, here I'm in Memphis, and they keep looping this crime over and over again. So, I mean, people don't even want to talk to each other. You know, people walking on the street, you know, they see another black person, they cross the street. They say that create more division, you know, amongst our people, you know, and it's psychological warfare on the state level. That's really what it is. It's a psychological war. And
How do you destroy an enemy? I want you to kind of go back and you look at the Indian American Wars. It's the same. It was the same exact approach. Yep. Teach them to hate themselves,
yep.
And you know, as much as you hate them, and then they begin to attack each other.
Exactly.
That solves your problem.
Yes,
and then
internalize it.
Right. And then you move, you know, well, the Apaches hate the Arapaho, and the Arapaho hate the Blackfoot, and the Blackfoot, and they begin to battle one another, and they do your job for you. And then you just come in and clean up. And like you said, it's psychological warfare. So it's the same thing that's happening. You have this group hates that group, and, you know, if you drive down some of the streets in North Philly, you'll find a row of churches, a row of big churches, and in that church are so many different congregations, and they don't communicate with one another. They don't interact with one another. They don't have fellow. If they came together as one group, you know how powerful that group would be. But they're separated.
And the ironic thing, it's supposed to be about love. So, how can you love your fellow, you know, church member who's of a different denomination down the, they live down the block, that, you know, that, yeah, it's madness. It's just insanity. And as I say,
right.
it is an absolute necessity for them to keep us confused and crazy, because anyhow we get our minds together, it's finished. You see, so they keep it going on. Anyway, brother, thank you so much. I'll continue.
Thank you.
Thank you for your
call. Talking with you.
We're going to take a brief break. We got 225 is next up. We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll continue the dialogue. And you can get involved, too, by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're in conversation tonight. We're in open forum, basically, but our special guest tonight is Doctor of Psychology, Dr. Carlton Payne. We'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Hey, did y'all see the stuff I posted on my wall?
No, it didn't even show up in my news feed.
Man, I'm done with social media. All the injustice and brutality going around, and it's like they're trying to suppress our voice. We're trying to get the message out there, and you can't even share empowerment and what's going on around the country either.
Nah, don't be dumb with social media, though. It's a tool, and there is a place where we have a voice. It's a Let's Buy Black 365 social network. You do anything you would on any other social network. Post pictures, videos, status updates, share resources and community news. But on Let's Buy Black 365, it's a platform for us and by us to tell our messages.
Whoa, that's like a digital underground railroad.
What's the name of that site again?
It's letsbuyblack365.com.
Yeah, I heard about that. It's all about networking, and you get points, right?
Yeah, the more you network, post, and share, the more points you get. Plus, you get points for posting pictures, sharing information, attending community events, and inviting others to network with you on the app.
Wow, that's all I need to know. I'm gonna go download that app right now.
Now, better yet, let me invite you so I can get some points. It's all about empowerment and solutions, y'all.
Yeah, that's what's up. I'm all in.
Let's do it. Let's share our stories.
Let's buy black365.com.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
I come here tonight and plead with you. Believe in yourself and believe that you're somebody. As I said to the group last night, nobody else can do this for us. No document can do this for us. No Lincolnian Emancipation Proclamation can do this for us. No Kennisonian or Johnsonian Civil Rights Bill can do this for us. If the Negro is to be free, He must move down into the inner resources of his own soul and sign with the pen and ink of self-assertive manhood his own Emancipation Proclamation. Don't let anybody take your manhood. Be proud of our heritage. As somebody said earlier tonight, we don't have anything to be ashamed of. Somebody told a lie one day. They couched it in language. They made everything black, ugly, and evil. Look in your dictionary and see the synonyms of the word black. It's always something degrading and low and sinister. Look at the word white. It's always something pure, high, and clean. But I want to get the language right tonight. I want to get the language so right that everybody here will cry out, yes, I'm black, I'm proud of it, I'm black and beautiful. Today our people can see that we're faced with a government conspiracy. This government has failed us. The senators who are filibustering concerning your and my rights, that's the government. Don't say it, Southern senators, this is the government. This is a government filibuster. It's not a segregationist filibuster. It's a government filibuster. Any kind of activity that takes place on the floor of the Congress or the Senate, that's the government. So this government has failed us. The government itself has failed us. And the white liberals who have been posing as our friends have failed us. And once we see that all these other sources to which we've turned have failed, we stop turning to them and turn to ourselves. We need a self-help program, a do-it-yourself philosophy, a do-it-right-now philosophy. It's already too late philosophy. This is what you and I need to get with. And the only way we're going to solve our problem is with a self-help program. Before we can get a self-help program started, we have to have a self-help philosophy. Black nationalism is a self-help philosophy. What's so good about it, you can stay right in the church where you are and still take black nationalism as your philosophy.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And you can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're talking about violence and solutions to violence in the communities, and we're talking about it with Doctor of Psychology, Dr. Carlton Payne. Dr. Payne, you still with us?
Yes, we are. Yes,
let me go to 225. 225?
Yes, good evening. Actually, I'm just in a listening mode. I just turned in, so just to carry on, I'm listening. So.
Well, you're on now, so weigh in something. I know you've heard a little
bit.
If the
topic is specifically violence, one of the things I thought about when you said that I was going to be coming up next is I know that there's supposed to be a conference of black psychologists. I think it's supposed to be the 50th anniversary, and I was wondering if the doctor had anything he could say about it in terms of. Well, anything. I don't know if there's anything.
Okay.
Well, by the way, here's one other possible topic. Dr. King just said that we need to get the language straight, and the doctor earlier was talking about the fact that police in our community are summarily executing us and so on, and I was wondering if right now we use the word power and the word authority sort of indiscriminately, and I was wondering if it would be a benefit to us if, for example, we differentiated those two terms So, for example, your grandmother, she has authority over you, so that even though she may be frail and whatnot, she has authority because you know that anything she says to you is likely to be in your interest. On the other hand, a thug with a pistol, he doesn't have any authority over you. He has power over you. And I think that in the case of police in our community, they represent power. They don't represent authority. And I'm just wondering, if, you know, what would you think about something like that?
I think that's very well said. However, in every society, there are written rules and there are unwritten rules. And often the unwritten rules are what really governs the society. So what you're saying is really the unwritten rules, that they are supposed to be an authority figure, but actually they are asserting powers, really occupation, especially in the Black community. But based on their what they have in writing, they have this belief or this, what they're projecting, what is happening is not really happening. So I think you draw an interesting dichotomy, and I think you have a truthful way of looking at what's really going on, what is written and what is in practice. It's the difference between theory and application, and I think you hit it right on the head.
Go ahead.
One of the ways that you can tell is that the police in our community, they get their orders from outside of our community. So basically their job is, for example, to contain us. On the other hand, police who actually have authority, they get their orders from the people themselves. And so, in fact, there was a fellow that made the point that when you look at the difference between the attitude of people in Chinatown toward the police versus the attitude of Blacks toward the police, is that you can see that in the case of Chinatown, they developed the police themselves, and the police were actually serving their interests. Whereas in the case of the Black community, obviously with slave patrols and all this kind of stuff, the police were always as you pointed out, a hostile occupying force. So, but in any case, all right. So, you know, I'll just let it go at that.
I think you make a very good point. It's the difference. It's something that I try to teach to the young people, the difference between fear and respect. They tend to conflate the two. But if a person fears you, they do not respect you. And if a person respects you, they do not fear you. But a lot of times, the police in the Black community, they are there to create fear. I don't know if you remember, but I think this is about 2004. A young man named Faheem Childs was killed on his way to school. He was shot. He was shot in a crossfire between two rival gangs. And he was a first grader, and it was a big human cry in the city. This will never happen again. And 15 years later, I was at living in a car wash, and on the wall of the car wash were all these pictures. I mean, the entire wall was covered. Some were large pictures, some were 3x5, some were newspaper cutouts of young Black boys. And I asked the owner, I said, "What are all these pictures on the wall?" And he said, "These are the kids that have been killed since Faheem Child was killed." Right. It were literally hundreds of young Black men that had been killed in the neighborhood in that 15-year period. So, you know, we cried out at the time. There were marches and there were save his life marches, and we were never going to let this happen again. So obviously, the approach that we are taking in order to put an end to this violence is not effective. It's time for a drastic and radical change that's effective.
I was in New Orleans a few years ago, and the police had come and told the community, evidently this fella had shot a police or killed a police or something. So they went around the neighborhood telling the community that they were looking for this fella and that they were going to kill him when they found it. So they finally found him and they killed him. And so there was a protest where, you know, we were protesting police brutality. And I remember police murder in this case. So I remember going to a church where the fellow's family was, and the people were praying. And by the way, this is in connection with the ineffectiveness of our current strategies.
Very well said. And so now
imagine this. Now I go to this church, and the intent is these are people who are up in arms about, you know, the fact that this fellow had been executed. And what I found there was that the elders, that is to say, the elders, they were not functioning as elders. They were functioning more like elderly people or senior citizens. In other words, they weren't really in charge. And what you found is that the children, they were sitting around looking afraid, wanting to know what's going to be done. And what the elderly were standing around doing was talking about they're going to be glad to go see their Lord. In other words, it's almost like they were saying, I'm only going to be here for a minute. I'll be glad when I get out of here. Mm. And I was just looking at the expression on the face of the little children, and they were saying, like, well, who's going to be taking care of me if y'all getting ready to go? So I think that one of the things that has happened to us with these kind of individualistic notions, and with these notions that somehow or another, when your back goes out, that, you know, there's no real role for you to play in the community anymore, it puts us in a situation where we're waiting for the help for some kind of external professional who's got some kind of violence prevention program and so on, as opposed to recognizing that ultimately these are functions for members of the community. So,
brother, thank you for your contribution.
You're welcome.
Hey, thank you know you what? So before you, before caller leaves, he asked in the beginning about the Black Psychologist Convention, and I think he mentioned something about white psychology versus black psychology. Can you give him a little synopsis on that? Because it is different, but
it's totally different.
Go ahead, talk about that before.
What happens is this. There is this belief of spirituality, and you saw that with the African spirituality and Native American counting coup, and the European always believed that that thing was childlike and ineffective and worshiping spirits. But African psychology, black psychology in the United States was based on African psychology, came out of that. And it combined three things together: the physical, the mental, and the spiritual. Okay, and those all three things in combination really help to bolster. You do one of two things: you bolster the organism to survive the environment, or you adapt the environment so the organism can live in the environment. And a mental adaptation to the environment is really what psychology is about. So the European came in and took the spiritual part and threw it out. It's totally unnecessary, you know, and they kind of just go with the physical and the mental. So African psychology combines those three because it recognizes that we are more than just that, you know. And I like to use Evander Holyfield as a prime example. He at some point in his career, he had a heart malady. And a reporter came to him, and he came back, and he won the heavyweight championship, like, for the second time. And a reporter came to him and said, Evander, you heard you had a heart issue. How did you come back and win the heavyweight title again? And Evander said, well, it was God. He said, when God is with you, can nobody be against you? And the reporter says, no, really, how'd you do it? So he totally discounted that spiritual aspect of the human mind. But we are much more than just two-dimensional beings, and that's what black psychology really is, and that's how black psychology really works. Does that make sense?
I think he's still there. Are you still
there? Yes, well, that's interesting. And by the way, Wade Nobles, in his book, he evidently, he and a group of psychologists went to Haiti, you know, during the earthquake. And he's got a title, I think it's called The Island of Memes, where he, I don't know, you know, what you know about that, but he evidently has got a pretty elaborate, you know, exposition of black psychology and whatnot. In fact, that's the whole ideal of of the Association of Black Psychologists is that they, I think what they said was that, you know, what we noticed was that the interests of our community were not being served by the categories, you know, in white psychology. And so, so the first thing they had to do is they said, well, you know, we've got this Association of Black Psychologists, but we don't even have a theory of the black mind. We don't even have a theory. And so, you know, so they've done quite a bit of work on
They've done some wonderful work. And as a matter of fact, I'm a member of the Association of Black Psychology. And what they do is they kind of take it from that, like that's what I said, from that very Freudian, very concrete type of thinking to a more spiritual, and what you said about Wade Nobles, he's a great in the field, and he kind of takes the mind of black people. Black people have a whole different agenda, and they have a whole different way of thinking. Prime example is something you talked about earlier. How does a black man show his masculinity? How does he express it in this society? The white man expresses his masculinity very clearly. Number one is money, possessions, dominance, right? But when you were not allowed to do that, when you weren't allowed to have those kind of things, you had to express your maleness, your masculinity through opposite means. And if you look at our ancestors who were enslaved, but who were captured and brought to this country, how did they express their manhood, their maleness? What would you say? And it tells you a lot about the black psyche.
You know what? It's hard to kind of put my finger. Well, go ahead.
Well, I'm thinking about a pathological expression.
Yeah, very good. You're very smart. Very bright man.
And, you know, through conquest of females, but that's one.
Right.
Okay.
So it was hypersexuality, being the sex machine. They would do it by clandestinely being the best dancer. Thomas Jefferson wrote about this. How could they work all day and then they could still party at night? You know, they kind of took pride in that. They would have one set of clothes, the clothes that they would wear to church on Sunday, and that would be their. You know, they would have maybe they may have only one outfit, their Sunday go to meeting clothes, and so those things, if you look at them, they have passed down through the generations. If you go to all Caucasian environment or a Caucasian, I thought it was in college. All Caucasian party, the one person that would be very well dressed would most likely be the African American person. That's been passed down through generations. I noticed that people in my parents' generation, they would always have the Cadillac. I mean, to a man, people that don't even know each other, they would have that Cadillac because that was something that was denied to them, and that was an expression of their masculinity. So you can see how. Like you said, it's an alternative way of expressing maleness, and that's what the black psyche. That's the corrections that we're making in the black psyche.
Interesting.
Hey, brother, thank you for your contribution.
You're welcome.
All right.
Excellent guest, Mr. Booker. Excellent.
Let's go to Newport News. Newport News.
Good evening, gentlemen. How you doing, Dr. Payne?
How are you doing, sir?
I'm going to try to keep it concise. I did Big Brothers back in the 70s when I was part of the military. And the only thing I haven't heard you touch on so far is something that I pushed a lot when I was in Big Brothers. Beating and brutalizing your kids with corporal punishment and verbal abuse is part of the problem in our community. And I'll put it this way, since you talked about spirituality, because I had when I talked to the boys and earlier, one of the callers was saying a key to finding out what they're all about is listening. And I can talk a lot, but I learn with children to listen. And
very good.
To a child, when I listened to them and I found any insecurities in them or the willingness to resort to physical domination to settle every dispute. I found one that was being whipped and beat, called all kind of worthless this and that. And one of the ways that we're going to be able as a people to effect any kind of progress over the next 10 or 15 years that you talked about earlier is to have parents to dismiss the slaveholders' use of corporate punishment.
Very good. Very good.
I ended up being a single dad behind this, and I won't give all my personal information, but I can tell you this. I didn't become a parent until I was 39 and 6 months old. So when my child turns in age, I'm 20 years older than he is. I turned 65 in July. He turned 25 in January. And by the time I had been with his mother for 6 years before he was born, and by the time he was seven, right at the critical age that you're talking about, I'd done enough observation of good parenting and also had started looking into a lot of what you're talking about now, knowing I was becoming a father. So I had 9 months to do this. And I was lucky enough to be up in Dallas at around SMU Law Library so I could get to stuff easy. And I've learned that if you cannot get a child to think, rationalize, and have self-value, you will never get them to be a good part of the community. And it's hard. A lady that I stay in contact with on Facebook a lot, I'm glad she has a book out called Spare the Child, Dr. Stacy Patton out of Morgan State. And she's getting a good following, but our people don't seem to understand that. And the other thing I'll say to you is when I was in Big Brothers, I would hear all the time from every generation, from the grandmother to the mother, the Bible says spare the rods and spoil the child. And I'd ask them, have you ever seen a shepherd abuse his sheep with a rod?
Wow.
A rod is used for guidance. Use the right nomenclature. Use the right meaning of the word. Sparing the rod means to give them guidance. The same thing Brother Booker was talking about earlier. Control what they watch, control what they do, and engage them in conversation so you can find out how they think. I'll mute myself.
Oh, excellent.
Very
call.
Well said. Just to remember what the caller said, you played an interesting tape in between the segments, and that was Martin King saying we use the right words. And just like your caller just said, the difference between discipline and punishment. For a lot of times, parents conflate those two words, but discipline and punishment are two totally different things. I discipline my child. No, you beat your child. There's a difference. The difference is the lesson learned from the intervention. And you could just punish the child, beat a child, and they never learn a lesson. They learn to avoid the beating, but they don't learn what you're trying to teach them. So no, that was the slave master's thing, and that was the quick fix for our people. You couldn't look them in the eye. I had to get immediate cooperation from my kids, so this was the most effective way. If I hit my kid, then the slave master won't kill my child. But those days are over. I remember when I was a kid, I had this old Mustang my parents had given me. And the thing was, the power steering unit was damaged on it. So in order to keep it from drifting, and I would have to move the steering wheel left to right. And I got so used to doing it, when I finally got my first car in college, I was still moving the steering wheel from left to right, and I couldn't figure out why the car was all over the road. And it was because I had adapted negatively, like the other caller said, in a pathological way to driving that car, and I hadn't adapted to the change. That is, so we still, our people still have some of the carrying forward through generations, some of those pathological adaptations to being abused and oppressed and we have to kind of take those things and reject them. We can't use it anymore. And beating our child, just like the caller was point perfect, beating your child is one of those things. That should not take place anymore. If you read any psychological book, if you read any statistics, even Popular Magazine, it says 90 to 94% of prison inmates report that they were spanked as children. That is not the panacea to positive behavior.
Wow. Interesting. Interesting, because, you know, we've all come from households where that happened. No, we'll put it this way. we come from a household where we had correction. It wasn't like beatings where you just go upside a child's head, you know, that type of thing. And plus, the environment I came from, you had plenty of opportunities to not do a thing. If you did, if you were told 2, 3, 4 times not to do a thing and you did it that fifth time, then you might get something to happen to you. But I understand what you're saying, because those things do have roots when our people were enslaved in bondage. So we have to come up with other ways to deal with our children. And then listen, like I said before, I came from that environment where, you know, I knew that my dad and mom were serious and they loved me. But, you know, for some odd reason, I raised 2 daughters and I never had to do that to them. So maybe I took things to another level.
Exactly. Each generation is doing better than the previous generation.
Yeah, that,
because different things are important to children now. Now the parent has to work. I do this with my families, and that is, you have to do your homework. You have to watch your child, do your homework, and look at your child and find out what's important to that child. This generation, when we were punished, you can't go outside. But if the parent tells the generation now you can't go outside, the kid doesn't care. I have Nintendo, I have everything in my room. I don't care if I don't have to go outside. That's not disciplining the child at all, you know. But I find that this generation, you take away that cell phone, that is a very effective tool. It's better than any spanking you could ever give that child. A kid will come into counseling and say, I can't take this. I feel cut off from the world. They took my cell phone. You don't realize how powerful it is to that child. So that's one example of the difference between discipline and punishment.
Wow. I guess we'll start winding things down. But, you know, you raised, this was an interesting discussion, because along with the problems, yourself and the callers talked about solutions. The first caller that we had in Atlanta talked about solutions. He didn't realize that he was talking about a solution, and maybe he did. But what he's doing, having those sessions with the 10 to 13 or 14-year-old boys and talking with them, even though he figured it in his mind he got stuck when he was asked a question, they might not have thought he was stuck, Dr. Payne. They enjoy talking with him. They enjoy interacting with him. And that's a key, man, that we have to do more of that. That's the solution to what we're dealing with.
Well, I totally agree. I what I've discovered in my years of doing this, that a lot of African-American men don't realize the power that they actually have. Some things are just tangible. Cameras and jail and police, but those are not the most powerful things for shaping belief systems and thus behavior. Especially young boys. Boys are hardwired to seek the respect and the pride of men. I'm at a basketball game, and at halftime, the little kid comes out on the floor, and he makes a layup. He's about maybe 7, 8 years old, and his dad is sitting in the stands, and dad is talking, and he calls his father, Dad, and the dad turns and looks, and he makes the layup, and the father says, that's great, son. He wanted his father to see him doing that. That he could make a basket too, and that shows you how powerful the male, the adult male, the impact that he has on that child. Some of them don't even realize the impact that they have on it, but they want their fathers or the adult males around them to be proud of them. And that's much more powerful than a prison or a jail or a police officer. And that is one approach that we can take as the adult to the children. Use pride as a powerful tool.
Interesting discussion, Dr. Payne.
I just want to go through a quick list for your callers on things with this solutions to the violence
Oh, great.
Problem.
Good. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, if they can just kind of grab their pencil and they can kind of go through some of these things. The first thing I said was there's no quick fix. You know, it's a 10 to 15 year, there's a 10 to 15 year process. Start with that 8-year-old. And what happens is the average person in prison is between 18 and 28. When they get past 28, a lot of times they don't come back because they kind of age out, they get smarter. So if we can kind of do the interventions, by the time that person is 18 years old, he won't be there. So no quick fix, okay? The second thing is to replace beliefs with truth. Let them see the truth, okay? Third, remove chaos from their environment. Some children are in chaotic environments. They're staying with mom this week, the aunt next week, there's somebody else's stuff next week. Different boyfriends are coming in and out of the house. Remove chaos from their environment, and they won't adapt in a negative fashion. Teach them decision-making, how to make correct decisions. Do not put adult decisions on them too early. I call it baking in the oven. If you put a cake at 350, it'll rise and it will brown. If you put it at 500, it'll overcook. It'll never rise. So no, let them make decision making gradually. Let them make their own decisions gradually. And the next one is to build internal resources, a sense of commitment, determination, endurance, drive. Those things are taught from us, children. And the last thing is recognize this. Children are visually oriented. Parents tell me this all the time. They don't listen to what I say. No, they watch what you do, and then they do it. Children don't listen to you. You know, we say, well, do what I say. Whatever they're saying is, don't do as I say, do as I say.
Mm-hmm.
But children watch you. They're very visually oriented, and they emulate your behaviors from how you walk to how you eat, to whatever you do. So recognize that they are visually oriented. If we can get those things, those steps to reducing violence, we will reduce violence in African-American communities.
You know, before you go, I just want to reflect back on the caller from Newport News and what he said. No, it wasn't the caller from Newport News. It was the other brother from Louisiana. And he mentioned about the protest that he was involved in behind a guy being murdered by police in New Orleans, and he went to the church, the family of the church of the boy that was murdered, and he said there was young people in the church, and he said that the older folks there who were church elders were concentrating on getting to heaven with the Lord, so to speak, and he said he looked at the faces of some of the young people and it was like, how does that relate to what we're dealing with? You know, those behaviors, because you talked about behaviors earlier, and you talked about how beating of our children relates back to behaviors that happened to us when we were enslaved by Europeans. That mentality, and I'm not, it's a fine line when you talk about religion, but that mentality of what the gentleman described is a behavior from enslavement.
I totally agree. It's a remnant of enslavement. But wait a minute.
I want to say this.
Who are the ones?
Go ahead. But people that do that don't realize that.
No.
Go ahead.
Go back to the days of Martin Luther King. Who were the ones who were leading the marches? Who were the ones that were leading the protests? Who were the ones getting knocked down with water hose? It wasn't the older population. It was the younger people. Martin Luther King was 26 years old at the height of the civil. People don't realize that. Those were the younger people with new ideas and new approaches because their predecessors had been programmed since the days of slavery. My father told me something that I'll never forget. He said when he was a kid, he was raised in Virginia. And if they had the black water fountain and white water fountain, and the bus would go through the white neighborhoods and would go to the black neighborhoods. So he said he was a kid, he was 12 years old. He said when the bus, after you passed through the white neighborhoods, there were no other white people were going to get on the bus. It was going to go to stop in black neighborhoods. So he said he would get up and go and see what it felt like to sit on the front of the bus. And he said all the black people in the back would say, What are you doing? Are you out of your mind? Stay back here with us. What are you doing up there? They had been so well programmed to sit on the back of the bus, they could not fathom a person sitting on the front of the bus. They had been programmed. And that same programming is there through generation after generation. The key is to recognize that it's there and make some changes.
Wow. you got room for one more?
Yes.
Let's go to 312. 312.
Yeah.
312, are you there?
Yes, can you hear me?
It's very faint. I don't know. Are you on a hands-free, or are you speaking into your phone?
Can you hear me? I'm speaking, yes. Can you hear me?
I hear you now. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. I was just going to say, speaking about punishment, and I know he referred to the Bible and sparing the rod, spoiling the child. But I know I have grown up and seen blacks are not the only ones who, break out the switch or the belt to discipline their child.
Well, wait a minute. Say that again. Well,
I was just saying many, many different ethnic groups discipline their children physically. That was my point.
You make an excellent point, but it was a study done, I think it was 1982, where the researcher looked at all different ethnic groups, African-American, Asian, white, Hispanic, and of all the groups, the group that reported the highest likelihood of using physical punishment were the African-Americans. And why? I mean, almost 2-1. Now, why are African-Americans doing this at almost twice the rate of other groups? And it definitely is a reflection of slavery. Mm-hmm. They looked at black people as chattel, as a horse. And in order to get a horse to do what you want, you have to beat it. You have to if you read some of the old stuff, like even Uncle Tom's Cabin, you read some of the stuff, the only way to get them to listen is to beat them. You know, they thought that we were ignorant and stupid and uneducated, and that was the only way to get black people to comply and to listen.
Okay, well, my question would be then, if many other ethnic groups do use physicalness to discipline their children, regardless of what the percentage might be, that has to come from somewhere, and I don't think it necessarily comes from them regarding their children as chattel. I just think that it's a tried and true way that sometimes this is just what is necessary to keep your child in place.
It's a different generation, though, and it's time for different approaches, especially for African-American people. We have to take a whole different approach. One thing in psychology is to look at what you've been doing and ask the client this following question: is what you have been doing effective? Is it working? If you look at our history in this country, that approach is not effective. It's not working. So
I would say it worked up until the time that white folks all of a sudden called it corporal punishment, and then I think that added to the disintegration of black families and the black community. At least that was my own personal experience.
Well, let me say this, Dr. Bain. I don't think it was necessarily the beatings that worked. It was the family interaction and your mother and father being there that was the working mechanism. It wasn't you getting beat that worked. You don't associate getting beat with some type of that made me a better person. No, what made you a better person is the interaction and the discipline and the morals and the fabric that was instilled in you by your mother and father. That's what worked.
Okay.
But go ahead, Dr. Payne.
I see what you're saying. Well, do you think we would still be doing it the same way if white folks had never come around and called it corporal punishment?
Personally, I don't think that we would be beating our children if we went back to cultural values. if you look at European cultural values, they always beat, they not only beat children, they beat their women. They sexually abuse their children. This stuff was historic. It's not something that they did. It was some type of anomaly. European culture is full of abuse. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Dr. Payne. Go ahead.
Let's look at this. Okay. The first prison was built in 1683. Okay. It held five prisoners. And guess where it was built? Here in Philadelphia. Prior to that, in order to punish their criminals, they used lashing. They used the stocks. They used dunking. They used physical punishment for these people. That was very European. They would use 20 lashes, 50 lashes. That would be the judge's sentence. So yeah, that's pretty much a European thing, you know. And I think we emulated that because our history was taken away of how our foreparents dealt with disciplining their children.
That's a good point. Thank you very much. Right. That's a very good point. And I just wanted to end, I'll hang up, by saying there's also a history of them being able, until recent century or century and a half, they had, by their own law, they could beat their wives.
Mm-hmm. Hey, very good. But if you read about African history, some of Africa, especially West Africa, they have something called manhood training. In order to become a man, at your 13th birthday, you had to go through certain things to become a man. Number one, you had to be circumcised. You weren't circumcised until you were 13 years old, okay? You had to live 3 days and nights in the desert. You had to kill a lion with nothing but a spear. You and a group of other boys had to kill a lion. Manute Bol went through this training, a manhood training. And if you could pass your manhood training, from that point on, you were seen as a man. So you were trained from the day you were born until your 13th birthday by your father, your uncles, and other people around you for this manhood training. So while you were doing that, you know, it wasn't something that you had to be disciplined or you had to be beaten, because you had the sense of pride that I had to pass my manhood training. Now, if you completed your manhood training, from that point on, you are seen as a man. You could marry. You will be given a place to live. You eat with the adults, and you make decisions with the adults. If you do not complete your manhood training, then no matter how old and gray you got, you could never marry. You had to live with your parents, and you would eat with the children. So you see how important manhood training was for boys at that time. And that was part of the discipline. It wasn't something disjointed. It was part of the whole growth of boy to man.
Thank you for your time. Have a good evening.
Hey, brother.
You're very
welcome. Call again. Are you a first-time caller?
You're very.
I think he's gone.
Very interesting caller. Very bright caller. Yeah. You have some very intelligent callers, and I really like listening to them.
Listen, this was a excellent subject to deal with. I'm glad that you talked about the solutions to this violence. The callers brought up some excellent solutions to it, and some of the callers have already implemented it. Our call out of Newport News talked about things he was doing. The first call out of Atlanta talked about things that he was doing. Even the call out of Baton Rouge talked about being involved in something and observing things in the church where these incidents happened. All of these things is part of what we're trying to do to reclaim our people, because the minds of our children are trying to be claimed by somebody. Hey, listen, I'm going to give an example, and I spoke about it Friday. I'm in my place of business. A young man came to me, and he comes in. His mother has been bringing him in since he was really young. Now he's 16 or 17. He's about ready to graduate from school. And he told me, I said, what you been doing this summer? Because I think he got a little part-time job. He said, he said, nothing. I haven't been doing anything. He said, I went to the movies. I've been to the movies a couple times. I went with my stepdad. And I said, oh, yeah, well, what did you see? And he said, well, I went to see Superfly. And I said, oh, yeah? So I said, well, what did you think about the images that you saw? And, well, he said, my stepdad told me that he seen the original. And this second one wasn't like the original. I said, well, what did he mean by that? He said, well, Superfly was selling dope and he got drugs from the man. I said, oh, okay. I said, who was the man? Who did he say the man was? He said, well, it was a white guy in the original. I said, okay, yeah, well, I remember that. I saw the original with Ron O'Neill. I said, well, what did you see in this one? He said, well, and he was trying to tell me about the movie. I said, well, let's cut to the chase. What did you put it in the synopsis for me, or put it, kind of condense it? He said, well, the guy that was selling dope, the original character, I guess he was similar to Superfly, wanted to sell dope, and he basically did it and got out of the community. But his friend stayed and sold dope. I said, well, what message is that sending? He said, well, I don't know what you mean. I said, well, what message do you think that's sending? Well, you can be successful if you sell it and get out. And that was the message that he picked up from. Also, wait a minute. Also, what he said was, I said, well, where did Superfly get his dope? He said, well, he got it from another guy's. He mentioned the guy's name. He remembered these characters from the movie. And I said, well, what did he look like? And well, he said he was black. And I said, well, was it any white guys in the movie? He said, well, no, because the guy that was over, the black guy that was getting the supply was this Latino. So in this new movie, there is no, quote unquote, the man, as it was in the 1972 version. The man in this movie is somebody black or somebody Latino. So the hand of European is not even in this movie. So the whole message he didn't get it because he's coming from a, and I know his mother. I don't know his stepdad, but I do know his mother. And the home he comes from is totally stable. And okay. To be honest, I think that if she knew he went to see Superfly, because I kidded with him, I said, did your mother know you went to see that? He said, no. So, you know, I'm just saying the environment he comes from gives him some stability. But I told him, I said, you know, look at the message. I said, you come from a stable home. But I said, what message do you think that's sending to people that might come from a dysfunctional home? I said, you know guys your age that come from a dysfunctional home, don't you? He said, yeah. I said, look at the message that they're sending them. Look at that subliminal message, Pete. Listen, Dr. Payne, and I also equated it with, if you look at the television, they got shows coming out now with the same type of theme. This show that they've been advertising, it was a Snowfall. You can see from the previews what it's about. And it's
nicely hidden.
Say that again?
It's nicely hidden away.
And the characters, you can see, are young black guys. Look like they're in between ages of maybe 16 to 25, 30. I mean, they're young. And it's all types of negative behavior. But I asked him, I said, well, when you see these shows, and when I asked him, I said, what do you think about some of these shows showing? And he mentioned the show Empire. He did.
Okay.
But when I mentioned this other show, Snowfall, and this one ATL that they advertise, he said, oh, yeah, I've seen the previews, but I haven't seen the shows. Same type of thing. Young people in the neighborhoods, the neighborhood's full of dysfunction. And they trying to make money selling dope. Now, I asked him, I said, well, let's flip the script. Give me some white shows where they're doing this or showing the same images. And he couldn't think of one. Now, I gave him one. I said, well, they had a popular show that was on a couple of years ago. This show, Breaking Bad, where it talked about this white guy selling meth. Now, he was dysfunctional, and I think he had a friend that was dysfunctional that was selling it with him. But if you notice, Dr. Payne, even in that particular show, everything around him wasn't dysfunctional. He didn't come from a dysfunctional community. His wife and children wasn't necessarily dysfunctional. His brother-in-law, sister-in-law, nobody else. So it's not like those other images that they show of black folks. The child is dysfunctional, the mother's on crack, the father's in jail. It's like a whole network of dysfunction. But when you see these white shows, it don't show no whole network of dysfunction. It shows that one individual that might be dysfunctional. So it's a whole psychological change when they're dealing.
I totally agree.
When they're dealing with this from a European perspective. I just wanted to throw that out there and get your perspective on it.
It's very interesting. You know, you remind me of a reporter that was reporting on Magic Johnson versus Larry Bird. And this, he reflected his belief system, much like what you were talking about. He said that Larry Bird's family was dysfunctional. His family was like a black family. The father committed suicide. He didn't have any work. They were out of work. They were poor. He said, now, Magic Johnson's family was like a white family. Both had middle-class jobs. Both were doing well, and they had a middle-class home. What does his statement tell you? In his mind, that's one is black and one is white, and that's what these television shows are projecting. This is black life in America, and this is how you should behave.
Wow. Yeah, well, it's a whole different image marketed to our young people, similar to what you're saying. They're trying to build that that cannon fodder for all those new prisons, and they're targeting.
And you start to believe it. Yeah. You begin to believe it because that's all you ever see. You say, okay, this is me. I'm looking for myself on television, and I can't find myself any. Oh, there I am. You know, I'm that drug dealer. I'm that guy that's shooting people. I'll emulate that. And there again is that third grade failure syndrome. I want to do one close down segment, if I might.
Go ahead.
I was looking at a 60 Minutes piece about a game preserve in Senegal, Africa. And there were poachers. Poachers were killing rhinoceri, plural for rhinoceros, and elephants and killing, taking their tusks. And they hired a bunch of game wardens, black game wardens, and they gave them the game warden uniforms, but they were being outgunned. These poachers were very well financed, had automatic weapons, and they were defeating the game wardens. So they were seeking a company to the government couldn't supply the weapons for the game warden, they didn't have enough money. So they said, there's a company that can supply the automatic weapons for the game wardens. And they did. A company, an import-export company, supplied the automatic weapons for the game wardens. So there was a battle between the game wardens and the poachers. Black poachers versus black game wardens, killing each other, back and forth killing each other. Well, 60 Minutes did an expose, and it turned out that the poachers were being supplied by a fur trading company, which was a subsidiary of the import-export company. So it turned out that the weapons were being supplied to both sides by this company, Caucasian company. The black men were killing each other, and they were reaping the benefits. So sometimes you have to look beyond what's being presented when you look at violence.
Oh, boy, I want to thank you for your contribution, Dr. Payne. And as always, I'll reach out to you when I got some questions dealing with psychology. I know that you can answer.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure, and a pleasure to listen to all your callers.
Peace. Talk to you soon.
Have a great night.
We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll start winding down the program. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening, Time for an Awakening, with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
I think you'll find, sir, that there will come a time when black people wake up and become intellectually independent enough to think for themselves, as other humans are intellectually independent enough to think for themselves. Then the black man will think like a black man, and he will feel for other black people. And this new thinking and feeling will cause black people to stick together. And then at that point, you'll have a situation where when you attack one black man, you are attacking all black men. And this type of black thinking will cause all black people to stick together. And this type of thinking also will bring an end to the brutality inflicted upon black people by white people. And it is the only thing that will bring an end to it. No federal court, state court, or city court will bring an end to it. It's something that the black man has to bring an end to himself.
You preachers and leaders, you administrators, you teachers, you leaders, you are the worst. No cowardly, punctified leader will lead this new generation of young black men and women. Your day of leading them is finished. You can't feel it? When you talk to young people, you can't feel that you're missing them? Parents, you can't feel when you're talking to your children that this is a new generation and they don't want to hear your compromising talk? Did you hear them in Ferguson tell Jesse, get the hell out of here? Yeah. You ain't no leader. I was hurting for my brother because Jesse worked hard for our people. But time has moved on. And what was good yesterday ain't no good at all today. So either you become a new vessel so that new wine can be poured into the old wine. For your day of leading our people is over, and it will never come back to you again. damn it, we're still in the land of our bondage. We're still in the land of captivity. We're still a slave to the Democratic Party, still a slave to the Republican Party. You can't even see a Freedom Party. You don't see it. You're a slave. I'm a slave. And unless we admit that we are slaves, then we can never get free. Never get free.
You're the one who put the present Democratic administration in Washington, D.C. The whites were evenly divided. It was the fact that you threw 80% of your votes behind the Democrats that put the Democrats in the White House. When you see this, you can see that the Negro vote is the key factor. And despite the fact that you are in a position to be the determining factor, what do you get out of it? The Democrats have been in Washington, D.C. only because of the Negro vote. They've been down there 4 years. And they're all other legislation they wanted to bring up, they brought it up and gotten it out of the way, and now they bring up you. And now they bring up you. You put them first, and they put you last. Because you're a chump. A political chump.
So you could see that the government of America has been planning our demise. Any members of Congress here, any members of the civil rights movement that are here, you love this nation. You've suffered every indignity to make America better, that she might be great. And every time you forced her to make a law that was in our favor, they came right behind that law with skill and chicanery to make the law of non-effect. When it came to treating the citizens of African descent fairly, America failed. She put them in chains. The government put them on slave quarters, put them on auction blocks, put them in cotton fields, put them in inferior schools, put them in substandard housing, put them in scientific experiments, put them in the lowest paying jobs, put them outside the equal protection of the law, kept them out of their racist bastions of higher education, and locked them into positions of hopelessness and helplessness. The government gives them the drugs, builds bigger prisons, passes a three-strike law, and then wants us to sing God Bless America? No, no, no. Not God Bless America. God damn America. That's in the Bible for killing innocent people. God damn America for treating her citizens as less than human. God damn America. As long as she tries to act like she is God and she is supreme.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening, and interesting conversation and interesting subject matter with Dr. of Psychology, Dr. Carlton Payne. The solutions for these problems is our responsibility and lies with us. It doesn't take much to come up with the solutions. The solutions to these problems is right before us. It's the will to do it. We can't rely on these people to handle these problems. They've created these problems. And the results of what you see is the intended results of what they surmised. The results of what you see, violence in our communities, gunplay every night, children failing in schools, schools closing, prisons being filled up. This is exactly the intended results of what they wanted all this stuff to be. We don't intend for this to happen to our people, to happen to our children, to have our families torn apart, to have this family dysfunction. The only way we can end this is if we do it ourselves and come up with solutions ourselves and implement them ourselves. We can change this dynamic. And we're going to do it. Monday starts the week with African Perspectives with Brother Oshi. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Later that afternoon, Acres of Diamonds with Brother Jihad Ahmed from 6 to 8 on Monday evenings on Time for an Awakening from 6 to 9. Let's Buy Black365.com Connect. Sister Nataki and Brother Talib. I don't know when season 2 is coming up. Season 2 will be coming soon. I know they are reviewing episodes from season 1 that were missed. And you can catch it on podcast too on timeforanawakening.com because their program, similar to Brother Jihad's, is also audio and video. So you can see both. Tuesday, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10 on Time for an Awakening. On Wednesday, Sister POC and Revive from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. on Time for an Awakening. On Friday, Time for Awakening is back at 8 p.m. Friday evenings. And on Saturday is SST, Saturday Sports Talk with Brother Troy Wilmore from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. Then Sunday starts everything over again with Revive at 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. and Time for Awakening at 7 a.m. Sunday evening. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware. I know the things that they'll soon have to take care of.
to be a fireman. And little Mary, she said she got to teach school. If we know, always say we know about the problem. To save the children.